I know, I say. I love it. Then we hear it.
Crick. Crack. Crick.
The ice groans beneath us. We jump up, laughing, and scramble together, hand in hand, to solid ground.
Chapter 24. Will. What's your dream place to live? I ask her as we walk slowly back around to the footbridge, her gloved hand resting inside of mine. We wipe away the fresh snow on the bridge's railing and hop up, our legs swinging in time with one another. Malibu, she says, setting the oxygen concentrator next to her as we look out at the pond. Or Santa Barbara. She would pick California. I give her a look. California? Really? Why not Colorado? Will, she says, laughing. Colorado? With our lungs? I grin, shrugging as I picture the beautiful landscape of Colorado. What can I say? The mountains are beautiful. Oh, no, she says, sighing loudly, her voice teasing. I love the beach and you love the mountains. We're doomed. My phone chirps and I reach into my pocket to see who it's from. She grabs my hand, trying to stop me. I shrug. We should at least let them know we're okay. Some rebel you turned out to be, she fires back at me, trying to snatch my phone from my hand. I laugh, freezing when I see my phone filled with texts from my mom. This late at night? I pull Stella's hand off to see every message is exactly the same. Lungs for Stella. Get back now. I swing my legs around, jumping up, excitement filling me from head to toe. Oh my God! Stella, we have to go right now! I grab her hand, trying to pull her off the railing. Lungs! They have lungs for you! She doesn't budge. We need to get back, ASAP. Why isn't she moving? Doesn't she understand? I watch her face as she stares off at the lights, completely unfazed by what I just said. I haven't seen the lights yet. What the fuck? You knew? I ask, shock hitting me like a tractor trailer. What are we doing out here, Stella? These lungs are your chance for a real life. New lungs? 5 years, Will. That's the shelf life on them. She snorts, glancing over at me. What happens when those lungs start to fail? I'm right back to square one. This is all my fault. The Stella from 2 weeks ago would never be this stupid. But now, all thanks to me, she's about to throw everything away. 5 years is a lifetime to people like us, Stella, I shout back, trying to get her to see. Before the beast Apatia, I would have killed for new lungs. Don't be stupid. I pull my phone out, starting to dial. I'm calling the hospital. Wait, she shouts, moving to stop me. I watch in horror as her cannula tubing catches again on a gap in the stone footbridge, her head jerking back as she loses her balance. She tries to grab the slippery railing edge, but her hand slides right off and she goes plummeting down. I try to grab a hold of her, but she slams onto the ice, landing on her back, the concentrator landing with a plunk next to her. Stella, shit, are you okay? I shout, about to launch myself over the side to her unmoving body. And then she starts laughing. She's not hurt. Oh, thank God. She's not hurt. I shake my head, relief filling my chest. That was some... There's a loud crack. I see her scramble, but there's no time. Stella! I call out as the ice shatters beneath her, sucking her in, the dark water swallowing her whole.
Chapter 25. Stella. I thrash, icy water all around me as I try to swim to the surface. My coat is so heavy, the water clings to it, dragging me farther and farther down into the deep. I frantically unzip it, starting to slide out of it when I see patches floating away. My lungs burn as I gaze up at the light from the hole that I fell through, the thin cord from the oxygen concentrator a guide to the surface. But then I look over to patches. My body sinks deeper and deeper, the cold pushing the air out of my lungs, bubbles pouring out of me and up to the surface. I go for the panda, reaching desperately for him, my fingertips grazing his fur. I cough, the last of my oxygen leaving my body, my head pounding, and the water fills my lungs. My vision blurs and darkens, the water changing in front of my eyes, slowly morphing into a black sky, tiny pinpoints of light appearing. Stars. The stars from Abby's drawing. They swim toward me, surrounding me, and circling all around me. I float among them, watching as they twinkle. Wait. This isn't right. I blink, and I'm back in the water, strength filling my body as I pull with everything in me back to the top. A hand reaches out to me, my fingertips wrapping desperately around it as I'm heaved effortlessly out of the water. I lie there, gasping, and sit up, looking around. Where's Will? Reaching up, I feel my hair. Dry. I touch my shirt and my pants. Dry. I lay my palm flat on the ice, expecting to feel the cold, but nothing. Something is wrong. I know you miss me, but this is taking it a little far, a voice says from beside me. I look over, taking in the curly brown hair, hazel eyes identical to mine, the familiar smile. Abby. It's Abby. I don't understand. I throw my arms around her, hugging her to make sure she's real. She's really there. She's... Wait. I pull back and look around me, at the frozen pond, at the stone footbridge. Abby, am I dead? She shakes her head, squinting.
Not quite.
Not quite. I am so happy to see her, but the relief at her words overwhelms me. I don't want to die yet. I want to actually live my life. We both hear a splash somewhere in the distance. I turn, looking for the source of the sound, but don't see anything. What was that noise? I strain my ears, and that's when I hear it, like an echo, somewhere in the distance. His voice. It's Will's voice, ragged, coming between sharp, shallow breaths.
Hold on, Stella.
I look at Abby, and I know she hears it, too. We look down as my chest starts to slowly expand and fall. Expand and fall. Over and over and over again. Like I'm getting CPR.
Not now. Come on, not now. Breathe,
his voice says, clearer now. What's happening? I ask her, watching as the view in front of me starts to slowly change. Will. His silhouette begins to form, close enough to touch. He's leaning over a body. My body. I watch as he shivers, coughing, his body swaying as he starts to collapse. Every single breath is a struggle, and I watch as he gasps for air, trying desperately to fill his lungs. And every breath he gets, he gives to me.
He's breathing for you,
Abby says, as my chest expands again. With each breath he blows into my lungs, the view in front of me grows more and more vivid. I can see his face turning blue, every breath painful. Will, I whisper, watching as he struggles to push the air through my body.
He really loves you, Stell, Abby says, watching.
As the scene sharpens, she fades. I turn to her, frantic, feeling again the loss that keeps me up at night, the unanswered question. Abby smiles at me, shaking her head, already far ahead of me.
It didn't hurt. I wasn't scared.
I take a deep breath, letting out a relieved sigh that I've been holding for more than a year now. My chest heaves suddenly, and I begin to cough, water pouring out of my mouth. I watch as my body, just a few feet away, does the exact same thing. Abby smiles wider now. I need you to live, okay? Live, Stella. For me. She starts to fade, and I panic. No, don't go, I say, grabbing on to her. She holds me tight, hugging me close to her, and I can smell the warm, flowery scent of her perfume. She whispers in my ear, I'm not going far. I'll always be here, just an inch away. I promise.
Chapter 26. Will. My throat is on fire. My lungs are done. One more time for Stella. Not now. Come on, not now. Breathe, I beg her, the cold pounding at my body as I hold her face in my hands, pushing all my air into her lungs. It hurts so bad, I can hardly stand it. My vision begins to fade, black swimming in from the edges, slowly overtaking everything until all I see is Stella's face, surrounded by a sea of black. I have nothing left to give. I have nothing left to... No. I straighten, desperately pulling in one more short breath, knowing deep in my chest that it is the last breath I will ever get. And I give it to her. I give everything I have to her, the girl that I love. She deserves that. I push every bit of air in my body into her lungs, collapsing on top of her. No idea if it was enough. Hearing the sirens of the ambulance, I called blare in the distance. Water trickles over my head as my hand finds hers, and I finally let the darkness consume me.
Chapter 27. Stella. I feel something pricking at my arm. My eyes fly open, my head spinning as my vision slowly comes back, bright lights overhead. But not the holiday lights, wrapping beautifully around the trees in the park. They're the fluorescents of the hospital. Then faces block them. Mom. Dad. I sit up, pushing out from under the blankets and look over to see Barb. She's standing next to the ER nurse who is drawing blood from my arm. I try to push the nurse's hands away, try to get up, but I'm too weak. Will. Where is Will?
Stella, calm down, a voice says.
Dr. Hamid leans over me.
Your new lungs.
I rip the oxygen mask off, looking for him. Dr. Hamid tries to get it back over my face, but I turn away, squirming out of her reach. No, I don't want them. My dad wraps his arms around me, trying to get me to settle down.
Stella. Calm down now.
Honey, please, my mom says, grabbing my hand. Where is Will? I cry out. But I can't see him anywhere. My eyes scan frantically, but my body gives up, falling weakly back onto the gurney. All I can see is his body slouched over mine, all of his air given to me.
Stella.
I hear a weak voice say,
I'm here.
Will. He's alive. I turn my head toward the sound of the voice, my eyes finding his. We can't be more than 10 feet apart, but it feels farther than ever. I want to reach out, to touch him, to make sure he's okay.
Take the lungs,
he whispers, looking at me like I'm the only one here. No, I can't. If I take the lungs, I will outlive him by close to a decade. If I take the lungs, he'll be more of a danger to me than ever. They won't let us in the same zip code, let alone room. And if I got bisepatia after I got the healthy lungs all CFers want, it'd be wrong. It'd be devastating. You're taking the lungs, Stella. My mom says next to me, her hand tightening around my arm. I look at my dad, grabbing his hand desperately. Do you know how many things I am going to lose to CF that I have already lost? The lungs won't change that. I'm tired. I'm tired of fighting myself. Everyone is quiet. I don't want to lose Will, though, I say, meaning it. I love him, Dad. I look from my dad to my mom, and then to Barb and Dr. Hamid, willing them to understand.
Take them.
Please, Will says, and he struggles to climb out from under an emergency blanket, the skin on his chest and stomach and abdomen a pale blue color. His arms give way as Julie and a woman with his eyes push him back down. But if I do, it doesn't change anything for us, Will. It makes it worse, I say, knowing that new lungs won't rid me of cystic fibrosis.
One step at a time, he says, holding my gaze. This is your chance, and that is what we both want. Don't think about what you've lost. Think of how much you have to gain. Live, Stella.
I can feel Abby's arms around me back at the pond, holding me close. I can hear her voice in my ear saying the same words that Will is saying now. Live, Stella. I take a deep breath and feel the familiar fight for air that I have every single day. When I was with Abby, I said I wanted to live. I'll have to worry about how after. Okay, I say, nodding to Dr. Hamid, and the decision is made. Relief fills Will's eyes, and he stretches out, placing his hand on a medical cart sitting between our gurneys. I reach out, putting my hand on the other side. There's stainless steel between us, but it doesn't matter. His hand is still on the cart as I slowly start to roll away. To new lungs. To a new start. But away from him. I hear my parents' footsteps behind me, and Barb's, and Dr. Hamid's, but I look back at Will one more time, his eyes meeting mine. And in that look, I see him when we met the first time in the hallway, running his fingers through his hair. I see him holding the other end of the pool cue while we walk through the hospital, telling me to stick around for the next year. I see him cut through the water in the pool, the light dancing off his eyes. I see him across the table from me at his party, laughing until tears stream down his face. I see the way he looked at me when he said that he loved me only a few hours ago on that icy pond. I see him wanting to kiss me. And now he smiles that lopsided smile from the day we first met, that familiar light filling his eyes until he's out of view. But I still hear his voice. I still hear Abby's voice. Live, Stella.
Chapter 28. Will. I fall weakly back onto my gurney. My entire body aching. She's getting new lungs. Stella is getting new lungs. Through the pain, my heart thumps happily. My mom's hand wraps gently around my arm as Julie puts the oxygen mask over my face. And then I remember. No. I sit bolt upright, my chest searing as I shout down the hallway, Dr. Hamid! In the distance, she turns back to look at me, frowning and nodding for Barb to follow her while the attending nurse keeps rolling Stella through into her surgery. I look at the both of them before I look down at my hands. I gave her mouth to mouth. The room goes absolutely still as everyone processes what that means. She probably has B. sepatia, and it's all my fault. She wasn't breathing, I say, swallowing. I had to. I'm so sorry. I look up into Barb's eyes and then over at Dr. Hamid. You did good, Will, she says, nodding at me, reassuring me. You saved her life, okay? And if she contracted bisepatia, we'll deal with it. She looks at Barb, and then at Julie, and then back at me. But if we don't use those lungs, they're wasted. We're doing the surgery. They leave, and I slowly sink back onto the gurney, the weight of everything pressing down on my entire body. Exhaustion fills every part of me. I shiver, my ribcage aching from the cold. I meet my mom's eyes as Julie puts the O2 mask back over my mouth, watching as my mom reaches out to gently stroke my hair like she did when I was younger. I close my eyes, breathing in and out, and let the pain and the cold give way to sleep. I glance at my watch. 4 hours. It's been 4 hours since they took her back. Shaking my leg nervously, I sit in the waiting room, staring anxiously out the window at the snow. I shiver despite myself, reliving the icy shock of the water from just a few hours ago. My mom kept trying to get me to go back to my room, put on more layers, but I want to be here. Need to be here, as close to Stella as I can be. I pull my eyes away from the window, hearing footsteps coming steadily closer and closer. Looking over, I see Stella's mom sitting down in the chair 2 away from mine, a cup of coffee clutched in her hands. Thank you, she says finally, her eyes meeting mine, for saving her life. I nod, fixing my nose cannula, the oxygen hissing noisily out. She wasn't breathing. Anyone would have. I mean the lungs, she says, her eyes traveling to the window. Her father and I, we just couldn't. Her voice trails off, but I know what she's saying. She shakes her head, looking over at the clock hanging above the OR doors. Just a few more hours. I smile at her. Don't worry. She'll be out making a 38-step lung transplant recovery plan in no time. She laughs, and a comfortable silence settles over both of us until she goes off to get some lunch. I sit alone, still nervous, alternating between texting Jason and Hope and staring at the wall, images of Stella swirling around my head, separate moments over the past few weeks jumping out at me. I want to draw it all. The first day we met, Stella in her makeshift hazmat suit, the birthday dinner, each memory more precious than the next. The elevator doors slide open, and Barb, as if she's heard my thoughts, emerges carrying an armful of my art supplies. Staring at the wall can get a bit boring after a while, she says, handing everything off to me. I laugh. Ain't that the truth? Any news? I ask her, desperate to know how the surgery is going, but more important, the results of the culture. I need to know I didn't give Stella bisepatia, that those lungs will give her the time she wants. Barb shakes her head. Nothing yet. She glances over at the OR doors, taking a deep breath. I'll tell you the second I hear something. I open to the first blank page in my sketchbook and start to draw, the memories coming to life again in front of my eyes. Slowly, noon comes, the door bursting open as Stella's parents come back, Camila and Mila trailing a few feet behind, cafeteria food containers piled high in everyone's hands. Will! Maya says, running over to give me a one-arm hug, careful not to drop her food. I try not to wince, my body's still weak from last night. We didn't know what you'd want, so we brought you a sandwich, Camila says as they all sit down in the chairs next to me, Stella's mom opening her purse to pull out a plastic-wrapped hoagie. I smile gratefully, my stomach growling its appreciation. Thank you. Looking up from my drawing, I watch all of them as they eat, talking about what Stella will do, their words overflowing with love for her. She's the glue that holds them all together. Her parents, Camila and Maya, every single one of them needs her. I pull my eyes away and draw, each page filled with another picture of our story. The hours swim together, Camila and Maya leaving, Barb and Julie coming and going, but I keep drawing, wanting every little detail to be remembered forever. I look over at her parents, her mom fast asleep on her dad's chest, his arms wrapped protectively around her as his eyes slowly close. I smile to myself. Seems like Stella isn't the only one to get a second chance today. The OR doors swing open, and Dr. Hamid comes through with a small entourage of surgeons. My eyes widen, and I reach out, nudging her parents awake, and we all stand, studying their faces anxiously. Did she make it? Is she okay? Dr. Hamid pulls down her surgical mask, smiling, and the three of us sigh with relief. Looks great, one of the surgeons says.
Oh, thank God.
Stella's mom pulls her dad into a tight hug. I laugh with them, all of us elated. Stella made it. Stella has new lungs. I plunk down on my bed, absolutely worn out, but happier than I've ever been. Looking up, I meet my mom's gaze as she sits in a chair next to my bed. Are you warm enough? She asks me for the millionth time since she got back to the hospital. I look down at my two layers of sweatpants and three layers of shirts I put on to appease her, a smile creeping onto my face. I'm practically sweating at this point. I tug at the neck of my hoodie. There's a knock, and Barb peers around the door, meeting my eyes as she holds up a sheet full of test results. I'm paralyzed. Her eyes aren't giving anything away of what I'm about to hear. She pauses, leaning against the door as she scans the paper. The bacterial cultures will take a few days to grow, and there's still a chance it will grow in her sputum. But as of now, she smiles at me, shaking her head. She's clean. She didn't get it. I don't know how in the hell, but she didn't. Oh, my God. As of now, she's bisepatia free. As of now, that's enough. What about Will? My mom asks from behind me. The sevoflomalin? I meet Barb's gaze, a look of understanding passing between us. She swallows, glancing back down at the papers in her hand, the results of a test I already know the answer to. It's not working for me, is it? I ask. She lets out a long sigh and shakes her head. No, it's not. Ah, shit. I try not to look at my mom, but I can feel the distress on her face, the sadness. I reach out and take her hand, squeezing it gently. For the first time, I think I'm actually as disappointed as she is. I look up at Barb, remorsefully. I'm so sorry for all of this. She shakes her head and sighs. No, sweetie. She trails off, shrugging and smiling faintly at me. Love is love. Barb leans in, and I hold my mom's hand while she cries, knowing she did all she could do. It's no one's fault. She eventually falls asleep, and I sit in a chair by the window, watching as the sun slowly sets on the horizon. The lights at the park that Stella never got to see switching on as another day ends. I wake up in the middle of the night, restless. Sliding into my shoes, I sneak out of my room, heading down to the first floor, to the recovery room, where Stella sleeps. I watch her from the open door, her small body hooked up to large machines that do the job of breathing for her. She made it. I inhale, letting the air fill my lungs the best it can, the discomfort tugging at my chest. But I also feel relief. Relief that Stella gets to wake up a few hours from now and have at least 5 more wonderful years, filled with whatever her to-do list has on it. And maybe, if she's feeling fearless, a few things not on there, like going to see some holiday lights at 1 a.m. When I exhale, though, I feel something else. I need to keep all those years safe. I tighten my jaw, and even though everything in me wants to fight it, I know exactly what I have to do. I look around the room at the small army I've assembled. Barb, Julie, Jason, Hope, Maya, Camila, Stella's parents. It's the most ragtag crew I've ever seen standing there, staring at the boxes laid out on my bed, each of them with a separate but important role. I hold up my drawing, showing the intricate plan I spent most of the morning working on, every detail perfectly accounted for and coinciding with a different person and a task. Stella would be proud. I hear my mom's voice from the hallway, loud and firm and getting stuff done as she does her part. I shiver, thinking about when she uses that tone on me. So, I say, looking up at all of them, we have to do this together. My eyes land on Hope, who wipes away a tear as Jason hugs her close. I look away at Julie, at Camila, at Maya, at Stella's parents. Is everyone in? Julie nods enthusiastically, and there's a chorus of agreement. Then everyone looks at Barb, who's dead silent. Oh, hell yes. I'm in. I'm definitely in, she says, smiling, the two of us on the same page for the first time probably ever. How long will Stella be sedated? I ask her. She glances down at her watch. Probably a few more hours. Her eyes scan all the boxes, the list of each of our tasks. We've got plenty of time. Perfect. I start handing out the boxes, pairing each person with their job. All right, Camila and Maya, I say, giving them their task list and joint box. You two are going to be working with Jason and Hope on the... My mom ends her call, poking her head back in the room. It's done. They said yes. Yes! I knew she could do it. I shake my head. You really are scary sometimes, you know that. She smiles back at me. I've had some good practice. I hand out the rest of the boxes, and everyone heads out into the hallway and starts getting everything ready. My mom lingers back, peeking her head inside the doorway. You need anything? I shake my head. I'll be there soon. There's just one more thing I need to do first. The doors close, and I turn to my desk, pulling on a pair of latex gloves and taking out my colored pencils. I've been stuck on the same drawing, a drawing of Stella spinning around on that icy pond, moments before I told her I loved her. I keep trying to get every small detail right, the moonlight shining off her face, her hair trailing behind her as she spins, pure joy filling every feature. Tears fill my eyes as I stare at the drawing, and I brush them away with my arm, knowing that for once, I'm doing the absolute right thing. I stand in Stella's doorway again, watching the steady rise and fall of her bandaged chest, her new lungs working perfectly. The now dry panda is tucked safely under her arm, her face peaceful as she sleeps. I love her. I used to always be searching for something, searching from every rooftop for something that would give me purpose. And now I've found it.
She's waking up, her dad says as Stella begins to stir.
I look up as her mom crosses the room, her eyes beginning to water as she looks at me.
Thank you, Will.
I nod as I reach into my bag with a gloved hand and pull out a wrapped package. Give this to her when she wakes up. Her mom takes it and gives me a small, sad smile. Then I look at Stella one more time as her eyelids start to flutter. I want to stay. I want to stay in that doorway and right by her side. Even if it's always 5 feet away. 6 feet, even. But for exactly that reason, I exhale, and with everything in me, I turn and walk away.
Chapter 29. Stella. I open my eyes. I stare at the ceiling, everything coming into focus, the pain from the surgery radiating across my entire body. Will. I try to look around, but I'm too weak. There's people here, but I don't see him. I try to speak, but can't because of the ventilator. My eyes land on my mother's face, and she holds up a package. Honey, my mom whispers, holding it out to me. This is for you. A present? That's odd. I struggle to rip open the paper, but my body is weak. She leans over to help me unveil a black sketchbook inside, the words on the front reading, 5 feet apart. It's from Will. I flip through the pages, looking at cartoon after cartoon of our story, the colors jumping out at me. Me holding the panda, the two of us standing on either side of the pool cue, us floating underwater, the filled table at his birthday party, me spinning around and around on the icy pond. Then, on the last page, two of us. In my small cartoon hand is a balloon, the top bursting and hundreds of stars pouring out of it, rolling across the page to Will. He's holding a scroll and quill, the words, Will's Master List, written on it. And below, a single item. Number 1. Love, Stella. Forever. I smile and look around at all the faces in the room. Then why isn't he here? Julie takes a step forward, propping an iPad up on my lap. I frown, confused.
She presses play.
My beautiful, bossy Stella, Will says, his face appearing on the screen, his hair its usual charming mess, his smile as lopsided as ever. I guess it's true, what that book of yours says. The soul knows no time. These past few weeks will last forever for me.
He takes a deep breath, smiling with those blue eyes.
My only regret is that you never got to see your lights.
I look up, surprised, as the lights in my room suddenly go out. I see Julie standing by the switch. Suddenly, the courtyard outside my recovery room window is ablaze, the entire space filled with the twinkling holiday lights from the park, twisting around the lampposts and the trees. I gasp as they cast a glow into my room. Barb and Julie unlock the bed, rolling it right up to the window so I can see. And there, on the other side of the glass, standing under a canopy of those beautiful lights, is Will. My eyes widen as I realize what's happening. He's leaving. Will's leaving. I grip at the sheets as a different kind of pain takes over. He smiles at me, looking down and pulling out his phone. Behind me, my phone starts ringing. Julie brings it to me, putting it on speaker. I open my mouth to speak, to say something, to tell him to stay. But nothing comes out. The ventilator tube hisses. I try to somehow tell him through my look not to leave, that I need him. He gives me a faint smile, and I see the tears in his blue eyes.
Finally, I've got you speechless, he says, his voice pouring out of the phone.
He raises his hand, putting it up against the glass of the window. I weakly raise mine, resting it on top of his, the glass just the latest thing keeping us apart. I want to scream. Stay.
People in the movies are always saying, you have to love someone enough to let them go.
He shakes his head, swallowing, struggling to speak.
I always thought that was such bullshit. But seeing you almost die.
His voice trails off, and my fingers curl against the cool window, wanting to smash it, but I can barely manage a knock.
In that moment, nothing else mattered to me. Nothing. Except your life.
He presses harder, too, his voice shaking as he continues.
The only thing I want is to be with you. But I need for you to be safe. Safe from me.
He fights to continue, tears streaming down his face.
I don't want to leave you, but I love you too much to stay.
He laughs through his tears, shaking his head.
God, the freaking movies were right.
He leans his head against the window where my hand rests. I can feel it, even through the glass. I can feel him.
I will love you forever, he says, looking up so we're face to face,
the both of us silently seeing the same pain in each other's eyes. My heart slowly cracks under the new scar. My breath fogs up the glass, and one more time I lift a shaking finger, drawing a heart.
Will you please close your eyes?
He asks, his voice breaking.
I'm not going to be able to walk away from you if you're looking at me.
But I refuse. He looks up, seeing the defiance in my face. But the certainty in his surprises me.
Don't worry about me,
he says, smiling through the tears.
If I stop breathing tomorrow, know that I wouldn't change a thing. I love him, and he is about to leave my life forever so that I can have a life to live.
Please, close your eyes, he begs, his jaw tightening. Let me go.
I take a moment to memorize his face, every inch of it, and finally I force my eyes shut as sobs rack my body, fighting with the ventilator. He's leaving. Will's leaving. When I open my eyes, he will be gone. Tears stream down my face as I feel him walk away, much farther than the 5 feet that we agreed on. That was always between us. I open my eyes slowly, some part of me still hoping he'll be on the other side of the glass. But all I see are the twinkling lights in the courtyard and a town car in the distance, disappearing into the night. My fingertips reach up, shaking, as I touch his lip print on the window. His final kiss goodbye.
8 months later. Chapter 30. Will. The speaker in the airport terminal crackles to life, a muffled voice breaking through the morning chatter and suitcase wheels clunking over the tiled floor. I pull out one of my earbuds to hear the voice, worried about a gate change and having to go cross airport with a pair of shitty lungs. Your attention, please, passengers for Iceland Air Flight 616 to Stockholm. I put my earbud back in. Not my flight. I'm not going to Sweden until December. Settling back into the armchair, I pull up YouTube for the millionth time, making my way, as usual, to Stella's last video. If YouTube kept track of individual views, the police definitely would have been sent to my house by now. I'd seem like such a stalker. But I don't care, because this video is about us. And when I press play, she tells our story. Human touch, our first form of communication, she says, her voice loud and clear. She takes a deep breath, her new lungs working wonderfully. That breath is my favorite part of the whole video. There's no struggle, no wheezing. It's perfect and smooth, effortless. Safety, security, comfort, all in the gentle caress of a finger or the brush of lips on a soft cheek, she says. Then I look up from my iPad to the crowded airport around me, people coming and going, heavy bags in tow, but even so, she's right. From the long hugs at arrival, to the reassuring hands on shoulders in the security line, even a young couple, arms around each other, waiting at the gate. Touches everywhere. We need that touch from the one we love, almost as much as we need air to breathe. I never understood the importance of touch, his touch, until I couldn't have it. I can see her, 5 feet away from me, the night at the pool, walking to see the lights. On the other side of the glass, that last night, always that longing between us to close the gap. I paused the video just to take her in. She looks so much better than I ever saw her in person. No portable oxygen, no dark circles under her eyes. She was always beautiful to me, but now she is free. She is alive. Every single day, I still find myself wishing I hadn't left. Reliving the moment of walking away, my legs like cement blocks, being pulled like a magnet back to her window. I think that pull, that hurt, will always be there. But all I have to do is see her like this to know it was worth it a million times over. A notification appears on my screen from her app, telling me to take my mid-morning meds. I smile at the dancing pill bottle emoji. It's like a portable Stella that I always have with me. Looking over my shoulder, reminding me to do my treatments, reminding me of the importance of more time. You ready to go, man? Jason says, nudging me as they open the door to start loading the plane to Brazil. I give him a big smile, down my meds dry, and slide my pillbox back into my backpack, zipping it up. Born ready. I'm finally going to see the places I've dreamed of. I have a checkup in every city, which was one of the three conditions my mom put in place before letting me go. The other two were simple. I have to send her as many pictures as possible and Skype her every Monday evening, no matter what. Aside from that, I can finally live my life how I want, and for once, that includes fighting right alongside her. We finally found common ground. I stand, taking a deep breath as I pull the strap of my portable oxygen farther up on my thin shoulder, but the breath gets caught in my throat almost as soon as I inhale. Because through all the airport chatter and chaos, just above the rattling of the mucus in my lungs, I hear my favorite sound in the world. Her laugh. It tinkles like bells, and I pull out my phone immediately, certain I've left the video playing in my pocket. But the screen is dark, and the sound isn't tinny or distant. It's just a few feet away. My legs know I should just go, board my flight, keep moving. But my eyes are already searching. I have to know. It takes me about 6 seconds to spot her, and I'm not even surprised that when I do, her eyes are right on mine. Stella was always the one to find me first.
Chapter 31. Stella.
What happened to winging it, Stella? Doing it Abby style,
Maya says, nudging me playfully.
I glance up from my itinerary, laughing as I carefully fold it and put it into my back pocket. Rome wasn't built in a day. I smirk at her and Camila, proud of my Vatican City joke. Get it? Rome?
Camila laughs, rolling her eyes.
New lungs, but not a new sense of humor.
I take a deep breath at her words, my lungs effortlessly expanding and contracting. It's still so wonderful, I can hardly believe it. These past 8 months have been bittersweet, to say the least. My new lungs are amazing, the physical pain of the surgery gradually giving way to a whole new life. My parents are back together, and we're all finally starting to mend, too. Like my new lungs, it hasn't fixed everything that's broken. The losses of Abby and Poe are pains I don't think I'll ever fully get over. Just like I know that no matter what, some part of me will never get over Will. And that's okay. The pain reminds me that they were here, that I'm alive. Thanks to Will, I have so much more life to live, so much more time. Aside from his love, it was the greatest gift I could ever receive, and I can't believe now that I almost didn't take it. I gaze around the airport at the high ceilings and the wide windows, excitement coursing through my veins as we walk to gate 17 for our flight to Rome, a trip I can finally take, to Vatican City and the Sistine Chapel and the first of so many things I want to do and see. It isn't with Abby, and I certainly won't be crossing off that one item on Will's bucket list, but just going makes me feel closer to them. I realize as we walk that I'm setting the pace, Camila and Maya following right behind. I would have keeled over from this much walking a few months ago, but now it feels like I could just keep going.
Everyone in for a picture? Maya says, when we find our gate, holding up her phone as we squeeze together, smiling big for the camera.
After the flash, we pull apart, and I glance down at my phone to see a picture from my mom of my dad eating breakfast, his eggs and bacon in the shape of a sad face, with the caption, "Miss you already, Stell. Send pictures." I laugh, nudging Maya.
Hey, make sure you send it to my parents. They've already been asking nonstop for pictures of...
My voice trails off as I see that her mouth is open in shock, and she's staring at Camila.
What? Did I do that thing with my face again?
Camila asks, sighing loudly.
I don't know why I keep smiling like that.
Maya holds up her hand to cut her off, her eyes flicking urgently to a big group of people waiting to board their plane, finally focusing on something behind me. Camila inhales sharply. I turn around, following her gaze, the hairs on the back of my neck standing on end as my eyes travel down the long line of people. My heart begins to beat faster when my eyes land on Jason.
And then I know. I know he's there even before I see him. Will. I stand, frozen in place as he looks up, and our eyes lock. The familiar blue that I've dreamed about for so long almost knocking me off my feet. He's still sick, portable oxygen slung over his shoulder, his face gaunt and tired. It's almost a physical pain to see him like this, to feel my lungs filling anew when his can't. But then his mouth turns up into that lopsided smile, and the world melts away. It's Will. It's really him. He's sick, but alive. We both are. I take a deep, unhindered breath and walk over to him, stopping exactly 6 feet away from him. His eyes are warm as he takes me in. No portable oxygen, no difficulty breathing, no nose cannula. I'm practically a different Stella. Except for one thing. I smile at him and take just that one more stolen step until we're 5 feet apart.
5 Feet Apart was written by Rachel Lippincott with Mickey Daughtry and Tobias Ikonas, and read by Corey Brill and Joy Osmansky. Editing and post-production by Matt Kartsonis. This has been a production of Simon & Schuster Audio. 5 Feet Apart is available in print from Simon & Schuster Books for young readers.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.